Volunteer-powered,
listener-supported,
community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB, I'm Kim Hahn.
And I'm Erin Wager-Miller. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, May 6th, 2019.
It's so expensive to run a business here in Bloomington because of taxes and rental costs and overhead. And I think that there's a way that we can work it out.
Later in the program, WFHB correspondent Michael Glab speaks with Denise Valkyrie, candidate in tomorrow's Democratic primary for the District 1 seat on Bloomington City Council. That's coming up later in the program on this week's edition of Big Talk Extra.
Also coming up in the next half hour, area resident Kit Summers talks about their volunteerism with Southern Care Hospice. That's coming up on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, your daily headlines.
Indiana University Bloomington graduated nearly 10,000 students over the weekend. On Saturday morning, IU Bloomington conferred over 7,000 bachelor's degrees. And on Friday afternoon, the university also conferred 2,600 postgraduate degrees at Assembly Hall. Commencement ceremonies for IU take place across the state from last Friday to this coming Saturday. According to a press release from Indiana University, the 2019 graduating class comprises of 56% women, with students coming from 138 countries, all 50 states, and the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico. Almost 70% of graduates at all of IU's 9 campuses are Indiana residents. Chuck Carney, Director of Media Relations at the university, says this year's graduating class also represents one of the school's most diverse graduating classes.
Obviously, we look at diversity as something that is a continuous process, and we're never exactly where we want to be, but we do feel good that 21.5% of our graduates are first-generation college students, and underrepresented minorities are 16.1% of the graduates, and 9.4% are international students. Now, that said, we never throw these numbers out and say we've accomplished this and it's done. This is something that we want to see grow every single year. We certainly want our diversity to at least reflect the state of Indiana, but we want it to be something that allows for opportunity for people who have not necessarily historically had that opportunity before. And that's something that we work on continuously through things like our Hudson Holland Scholars and 21st Century Scholars program, things like that that really have made a difference and have gradually made that number tick up over time. It's aspirational. I mean, we as a university are really mandated to do this, and we should do this because that represents that we're getting the best and brightest people from all walks into IU. And that's really our goal, because that eventually is better for everybody around Indiana and the country and the world if we're doing that. So we're always going to be working on that.
According to the university, its most popular degrees are a Bachelor of Science in Finance with over 800 graduates and a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology with over 400 graduates. The age range among graduates ranges from 19 years old to 76.
Tomorrow is primary elections day across the state of Indiana. While there are no statewide votes or elections taking place tomorrow, several municipal elections will determine party candidates for this November's general election. Early voting in Monroe County ended at noon today. Earlier this year, the Ellettsville Town Council voted to suspend primary elections since there are no contested races in Ellettsville at this time. Bloomington residents will have a chance to cast their ballots for mayor and city council representatives in contested races. Incumbent Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton is expected to win tomorrow's mayoral primary. Fellow Democrat and mayoral challenger Amanda Barge will still appear on ballots tomorrow, despite announcing she will concede the race if she beats the first-term incumbent mayor. Barge was asked to resign as a Monroe County Commissioner and asked to concede that race if she wins tomorrow after sexual harassment allegations were published in the Indiana Daily Student in late March. Monroe County Elections Supervisor Karen Wheeler says early election turnout for tomorrow's primary is about on track for previous elections.
We had 1,901 walk-in votes, and we had 150 mail ballots, so that was 2,051. For the municipal, I have the number of registered voters is 53,600 that are eligible to vote, leaving 3.83%. That's how many voters came out.
In Bloomington, 19 candidates are running for 9 seats on city council. All but 3 of those candidates are Democrats running in contested races. The exceptions are incumbent Democrat from Bloomington's downtown district number 6, Steve Volan, Republican Andrew Gunther in city council's district 2 race, and district 3 Democrat Ron Smith, who is running unopposed after Jim Blickensdorf dropped out of the race in early April. Election Supervisor Karen Wheeler says more races could become contested before November, once the Monroe County Republican Party caucuses for candidates and independents announce their candidacy.
At this point, we just have the Democrats basically are picking who they want, and we only have one Republican that's running in District 2. Other than that, all the candidates are Democrat. So the Republicans would have the opportunity to caucus in people over the summer, and depending on how that goes, our voting could be totally different in the fall. So we really don't know who's going to be on the ballot, or if we had Libertarians or Independents or some minor party that came along. So until we know that, it's hard to guess what's going to happen then. Generally, the municipals are not that big of a race. And then we also could add Ellettsville. We don't have Ellettsville in this election, in the primary, depending on what happens with them. They very easily could be on the ballot in the fall for us, too.
Over 2,000 Bloomington residents have cast their ballots in early or absentee voting. To find out your voting location, visit the State of Indiana's voter information website at indianavoters.com.
Jack Hopkins Social Service Funding Committee considered funding requests last week from 27 area social service agencies looking for financial support. Committee Chair Isabel Piedmont Smith said need always exceeds the available funding.
Just to review what has happened so far, the committee did meet on October 22nd to review applications. We received 31 timely applications for a total request of $617,395. And we only have $313,387 to distribute, so you see we're going to have some tough decisions to make.
Projects in need of funding range from food security to mental health services to community activity centers and playgrounds. Many well-known area agencies are among the applicants, such as Catholic Charities, the Hoosier Hills Food Bank, Volunteers in Medicine, the Center for Sustainability, and the Shalom Community Center. As an employee of Shalom Community Center, committee member Dorothy Granger recused herself from any discussion of or vote on Shalom's application for funding. Some applications support collaborative efforts between area agencies. For example, South Central Indiana Housing Opportunities and the Community Justice and Mediation Center have joined forces with Justice Unlocked and the Tenant Association to create a resource for tenants facing eviction. SIHO Executive Director Deborah Meyerson explained the project to the committee.
The tenant assistance table is a resource table that we have proposed to be staffed at the Monroe County Justice Center. It's a collaborative project that will be staffed by participating social services, mediation, and legal agencies, of which we're just represented here, to provide guidance to tenants during time scheduled for small claims court eviction and damages hearings, approximately 5 hours weekly. The tenant assistance table will provide support to tenants facing eviction proceedings and other housing issues. The goal is to reduce evictions and improve overall housing stability for renters in the city of Bloomington and Monroe County, particularly low-income households.
Monroe County Special Olympics is a first-time applicant for Jack Hopkins Social Service funding. Like many applicants, Special Olympics coordinator Denise Brown said her organization relies on grants to supplement their own fundraising efforts. Established in 1993, the Jack Hopkins Social Service Fund is named after former City Council member Jack Hopkins. According to the City of Bloomington website, the fund has provided more than $4 million in grants for area social service projects since its inception. Committee Chair Isabel Piedmont-Smith said this year's grant allocations will be announced next Monday. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Erin Wagermiller.
And I'm Kim Hahn. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com. Denise Valkyrie is running against Bloomington City Council District 1 longtime incumbent Chris Sturbaum and fellow challenger Kate Rosenbarger. Valkyrie says she knows what it's like to live from paycheck to paycheck. She says she and her family even know how to get by on no paycheck. Now the administrative and support coordinator for WFIU, WTIU, and Indiana University Radio and Television Services, she says she hopes to bring her experience to a city council that she says lacks that perspective. Valkyrie joined host Michael Glab on last week's edition of Big Talk. The conversation continues today on today's edition of Big Talk Extra.
Denise, what do you say we talk about the issues?
All right.
You want to support businesses that pay a living wage.
Yes.
There are businesses here in Bloomington that don't pay a living wage. You must be implying that.
Oh, it's not an implication. They understand it as well.
Yeah.
And they're in a between a rock and a hard place.
Right.
They would love to pay their employees a living wage. And I've talked to business owners that pay their employees more than they actually end up taking home themselves. It's so expensive to run a business here in Bloomington because of taxes and rental costs and overhead. And I think that there's a way that we can work it out to where they can have a tax break or some kind of grant funding if they pay their employees a living wage. And when I say a living wage, I mean, let's rip that Band-Aid off. I'm not playing with $15 an hour. The living wage should be right around $22 an hour, and it should be adjusted to the cost of living in Bloomington. So if we work with economists to figure out how we can work that out for the businesses here in Bloomington, I know that those business owners would absolutely jump on it. And in addition to that, if we show that how friendly we are to businesses that way, more businesses would want to come to Bloomington to employ more people.
Speaking of jobs and getting to them, you advocate for better public transportation.
I do.
In what way?
In several ways. I advocate for better bus transportation. I advocate for those buses also to be electric. And not fossil fuel. Let me tell you a little story.
Please.
My grandfather came to Indiana University. He wasn't able to finish. He had to go back to the farm and help. But there's a picture of him here in his knickers with his Argyle socks and his bow tie and his vest with his bicycle with a tire that was about as tall as I am.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That old-fashioned.
Those old-fashioned. And they were the bane of the society. They scared the horses. They got in the way of the cars. They parked anywhere.
Yeah. Sounds like the scooters.
Sounds just like the scooters, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I like the scooters. They're electric. They're easy for people to get around on. And people like me who have a bad back and our hips hurt or our feet hurt, you know, we love to go downtown. We love to go do things, but it's hard for us. Those scooters are great for us. They're great for the kids.
Have you done it?
I have. I think it's the best thing.
I don't see any scars or black
no
and blue
scars.
Marks on
I here. Follow the rules of the road just like you're supposed to when you ride a bicycle. I also would like to see people have more electric cars.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see us find a way to make that possible. I also supported, as a part of that transportation issue, the rebuilding of the 4th Street garage. And in Chicago, their new garage has wind turbines in the corners.
Uh-huh.
And they just supply electricity for the electric cars and vehicles that park inside that garage.
Mm-hmm.
They also have water catching and energy coming from that. And I also support solar roofs on every new build in the city, period. I think it should be in our building code that if you're going to build a new building, you need to put a solar roof on it.
Uh-huh.
I also feel that people, when we put new roofs on our homes, we should have some sort of program to be able to install those solar panels on those as well. Because we need to move away from fossil fuels as quickly as we possibly can.
You also talk about health care. You mention rural health deserts.
Oh, yes.
Now, you want to work with the county to somehow work this out.
I do. I want to work with the state. I want to work with everybody to try to improve access to health care. One of the things that we talk about with the health care deserts, again, goes back to transportation. Poor folks in the rural areas have a hard time getting to health care. Also, with the consolidation of healthcare, doctors are being pulled out of the rural areas.
Yeah.
Eleanor Roosevelt did a great thing when she had the traveling nurses going around. And I think that might be something that we should look at again as we're dealing with this healthcare crisis. And it is a crisis. We've got more people that can't afford their healthcare, that can't get to where they need to go, losing their life savings, losing their homes, moving in with their family. My mother's living with us right now after her healthcare crisis and trying to rehab her home so that it's more appropriate for her to live in again. You know, all of these issues just tie into each other. I spoke with Cindy Chavez, who operates one of the food pantries in Ellettsville.
Okay.
And she was shocked at the 6,000 people that they serve a month. She thought it might be, you know, 20 or 30. And these are...
She had no idea.
No
even
idea.
Even going into the job.
Even going... She did it as a Girl Scout project, and it grew.
Wow.
So the girls learned a lot, and Cindy learned that there's a very big need, even in a place like Ellettsville, for people to have access to good, healthy food.
And how can a city council member work with the county and the state to benefit these people who don't necessarily live within the city limits?
I think that's a lesson that we were taught by Richard Lugar, who recently passed away.
Yeah.
He worked to develop the city-county council in Marion County as Indianapolis was growing. Our city is growing by 1,000 people a year for the next 10 years.
Right.
I think that we can look at what he did and what the people there did to help with that, even as they're struggling now again with a different issue. They've got food deserts there.
There's always a struggle.
There's always a struggle. That's absolutely right. And how we can make the field more level, and equitable. My son asked me if this is a Renaissance city, and I said, I think it is. I think this is as close as we're going to get to a Renaissance in our lifetimes. And I think that it takes people like me who have experienced it and are connected with people. I don't want to be a hero. I'm the person that's with them. And one of my quotes says, I'm the voice from the back of the room. I was actually called that at a conference because I was in the back of the room going, what about this? You know, and it takes listening to those voices and understanding what their needs are and then being able to empower them to help themselves. And that's, I think, what a city council can do for its community.
Now, Denise Valkyrie, if someone wants to get in touch with you or your campaign, how do they do it?
Well, I do have a Facebook page called Vote Valkyrie. I also have email, and it's just as simple, VOTEVALKYRIE@gmail.com. My website is votevalkyrie.com.
That was Bloomington City Council District 1 candidate Denise Valkyrie speaking with Big Talk's Michael Glab. Full episodes of Big Talk air Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. right here on WFHB.
Support for WFHB comes from Lauren Wood Builders. Lauren Wood Builders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. More information is available online at laurenwoodbuilders.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring audio profiles of local volunteers who stand up for what they believe in, spark change, and create meaningful impact in our community. We invite you to get to know some of these volunteers through their inspiring stories of service.
Hi, my name is Kit Summers, and I volunteer with Southern Care Hospice. My understanding of hospice is just kind of giving the best care to individuals who may have a terminal illness or may just be nearing the end of their life. It's typically individuals who have around 6 months left to live. I am interested in going to medical school, and I'm really interested in palliative care. And from that interest, I learned about hospice, and I was always interested in the idea of just easing someone's suffering, providing the best care at that point in their life, making sure they're happy, comfortable, and just giving a sense of comfort to family members who maybe can't be near their loved ones who are going through that. I kind of became involved with Southern Care Hospice when I came back to school. I'm a senior, and I really wanted to get involved more in the community. And I met with Suzanne, the volunteer coordinator, kind of talked with her about what volunteers do, just basically acting as happiness and a bright light to patients in their services and visiting with them every week, maybe working on projects like looking through making memory books or photo albums or different things like that. So I was really interested in that. And it kind of touched a personal note with me because I have a grandmother who's not in hospice care, but kind of going through similar diseases where that could be an option in the future. So it was very close to my heart to be able to do that. I'm now realizing that even the smallest thing, just sitting and talking with someone for 30 minutes or an hour, can brighten up their entire day. And I just love the fact that I can give comfort to family members who maybe are hundreds or thousands of miles away from their loved ones in hospice care. Just being able to do that makes me feel so good about myself and knowing that I'm helping myself, but I'm also helping a lot of other people. Even walking into a nursing home, seeing all the nurses, all their faces light up like, oh, you're here again. It's so exciting. You know, your patient is so excited to see you. He always gets so happy. And just watching their face light up when I'm there, even if we talk about what we did on Thanksgiving or go through old photo albums, just being able to be there and be kind of a source of light and happiness when maybe they're surrounded by you know, they're not surrounded by young, lively kids all the time. So when I started coming back this semester in August, I went through all the training, all the CPR training and hospice care and understanding really what that was. And I got paired with a patient who maybe had similar interests to me or Suzanne just thought would be a really great person to have me talk to. And so I have not been through the entire process where a patient of mine has passed away. But I think that's going to be a big part of like growing and understanding death and being okay with that because it is inevitable. And when that does happen, I know I will want to continue volunteering and just be paired with someone else and continue that journey. Anytime I walk into my patient's room, seeing his face light up when he recognizes me and just giving him a hug and saying, hey, like, can we have a quick visit? I haven't seen you all week. I've missed you. And just seeing how much he loves telling me about his week and what's been going on. And then every week when I go in to talk with Suzanne, she'll ask me, how's your patient this week? How are things going for you? Like, are you feeling comfortable with this still? Have you noticed anything that maybe we haven't been able to notice? And just saying in person, thank you so much. You guys don't understand how important it is what you do volunteering. Thanks for listening. I'm Kit Summers, and I volunteer with Southern Care Hospice.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to inspire, engage, and connect individuals to their community. Listen to episodes of Activate online at WFHB.org. You can read more about the profile, see photos, and connect to featured organizations and causes. And visit BloomingtonVolunteerNetwork.org to discover even more opportunities to serve, give, and advocate. Get inspired. Inspire others. Activate in your community. For WFHB Community Radio and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Sarah Vaughn in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is executive producer Wes Martin. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Scott Schmatke, and Danny Graff. For WFHB, I'm Erin Wagermiller.
And I'm Kim Hahn. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program.
For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news at wfhb.org.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a daily local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.